Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back. It's Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr here in the North Dakota Corn Growers Studio. It's been nearly a month ago now. At the beginning of May, I was in Washington, D.C. for an event called Washington Watch. And although a month has gone by, the message has not changed. Farms, farmers, and farming often fly below the radar of the U.S. media. Another thing hasn't changed. The wet weather in the Central Plains eastward into the east central and southeastern U.S. Arkansas Congressman Rick Crawford had this to say to us.
I was told by our Farm Bureau president somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think he said 30 million acres that we will lose, maybe more. And most of our rice crop was planted. There potentially still a window to replant. But if these things were happening, you know, in any other kind of a business, it'd probably get a lot more attention. Agriculture is one of those endeavors that there are so many variables and so many risks, and yet there's still very little dispensation given to agriculture. And the value proposition to the taxpayer, the national security implications of being able to feed and clothe ourselves. And so this is a very important issue to me as it's playing out right now. But I hope this also will serve as an illustration of why farm policy is so important and why it's so important to get it right. You know, you write a farm bill in the last farm bill we had, historic high prices, and before the ink dried on it, we were tanking, and now we're on, I guess, 3 years of sustained low prices. I think net farm income down 50% since 2014. Y'all know the statistics better than I do. So how do we fix that? And I'm not sure that we can fix it. I mean, there's just so many vagaries in agriculture. It's just inherent in what ag producers do. But we can do some things to take the pressure off. We're seeing some evidence of that already. You know, when I first ran for Congress, and I eat, sleep, and breathe agriculture. I was in the ag industry as a broadcaster, was in the equipment business, was in the cattle business myself for a while. You know, these issues are I'm pretty comfortable with. And as I was going around campaigning back in 2010, farmers were saying to me, look, the farm bill is less important. If you can just get the EPA off our backs, and if you can open up trade, we think we'll do all right. So now fast forward to 2017, I'm driving home from the airport just a few weeks ago, and one of the biggest producers in my district calls me up and he says, you know, I'm about ready to get out of this PLC program and just get out of programs altogether. I think we can make it work without it. If you can just open up some markets and, you know, constrain some of these regulations that we're dealing with. And so while we struggle with trying to do the right thing to enhance agriculture from a policy perspective, sometimes what's glossed over is the fact that we haven't done a good job in opening markets, leveling the playing field from a global perspective, recognizing that agriculture, whether you like it or not, you're in a global business. You know, you could grow vegetable crops locally, sell them locally, but that has a global impact, because that means that you've accessed a market that displaced somebody else. So it's all interrelated, but 1 in 4 rows of our soybeans goes to China. So it doesn't matter where you grow those soybeans, you're a global player. So I think we should focus our efforts more on how we level the playing field globally, and recognizing that, yes, we have some challenges with other nations and how they subsidize at much, much higher levels than we do. But we are exceptional. I think in many cases that we're victims of our own success with regard to our ability to grow food and fiber and put that out in the global marketplace. And then compounding that is the ever-present crosshairs that are placed squarely on U.S. producers from others in the global community. And, you know, I think about, for example, you know, Brazil and our cotton issues that we've had with Brazil, which I would argue that cotton was vulnerable to some degree, but what the Brazilians really were trying to do was to weaken us for the purposes of expanding their what they view as a huge opportunity in soybeans. And there wasn't necessarily the vulnerability back when they attacked Step 2 cotton program. There wasn't necessarily the vulnerability in soybeans. So they carved out a niche to weaken us. It worked from a cotton perspective. It's decimated our cotton industry. Our textile industry is non-existent here in the United States now. It's taken away a pretty important mill direct marketing tool for cotton growers. Once we start to lose ginning capacity, that doesn't come back. Infrastructure in the cotton industry, it's like cutting down an oak tree. You can cut down an oak tree real quick, take you 5 or 10 minutes, but it'll take you 50 years to grow it back. So when we see these kinds of things happen, it sends ripple effects through the economy in rural America. So, you know, I'm bringing that perspective from the Mid-South. There's a lot of you that don't cover cotton. You know, you've in the Midwest, upper Midwest, other parts of the country where they don't grow cotton. But it's been significant for us in the cotton belt. So I say that to say this. I hope we, recognizing, yes, we're gonna try and tweak some of these programs, PLC and ARC. We just had some hearings about that. Got good testimony, got good records on those two programs. Those will likely continue, but I hope that we place more emphasis on how we level the playing field for farmers in terms of the regulatory climate that exists here. I think we're seeing positive changes there. And then what we do in the global marketplace with regard to trade and how we push back against some of the challenges that we face with regard to accessing global markets.
Congressman Crawford, do you see the day coming where we'll forego the Title I of the Farm Bill for just crop insurance?
Yeah, I think, what we saw in the last go around was, groups like Environmental Working Group, for example, no sooner than the Farm Bill was signed, they said, next stop, crop insurance. So the idea that the Environmental Working Group is some, benign, taxpayer watchdog that's just looking out for, John Q. I don't believe that. I believe they have an environmental agenda and they want to take money out of production agriculture, put it into their conservation agenda, and crop insurance is going to be their next target. It is their next target. And I'm not just highlighting the Environmental Working Group. There's others out there that feel the same way about it. So we're going to have to, at some point, address that issue. I hope we don't have to pick one or the other. I don't see that happening in this next one, but we'll see what the dynamics are. They can change quickly, and we feel like over the last 2 years, we've had a very aggressive hearing schedule because we weren't just waiting for the expiration of the Farm Bill and then go, oh yeah, let's rewrite a Farm Bill or reauthorize a Farm Bill. We've set about a very active process of being able to produce a more productive and meaningful Farm Bill on time. And so we'll see. I think the dynamics are, I understand your question, and we're kind of tracking that way, but I don't see that being necessarily a threat that'll be presented in this Farm Bill.
Will the Cuba market be opened anytime soon?
I'm glad you asked me about Cuba. I spent a lot of time on trying to help farmers access Cuba. It's really kind of a no-brainer, and you think about this, we can sell ag goods to Cuba now. It just requires cash up front, and that's the only country that we deal with on those terms. And the argument that's presented is, well, they've got an oppressive regime, they have human rights violations, they have currency manipulation, they're communist, they're this, they're that, they're the other. So are most of our trading partners. So that argument doesn't hold water. In fact, I think it's in our interest for a variety of reasons, not just economically, but militarily, to play a role in their economy. And so agriculture is a first natural step in that direction. The Cuban people, most people are dealing with the thought of Cuba trade in the abstract. Most people that make these assertions about Cuba have never been to Cuba, and they're viewing this whole issue through the lens of the Cold War. It's 2017. It's time to recognize that there is a benefit to us in engaging in Cuba in a more productive way. We can shape the future there, or we can allow Russia, Iran, China, and others who don't have our interests to invest and present even a greater threat to us. So I've been there on a few occasions, and I've seen what is taking place there. Socially, politically, economically, they're on the cusp of some pretty major change. We can be facilitators of that change, shape it, and help direct it in a productive way, or we can continue to sit on the sidelines and allow whatever happens to happen and then deal with the fallout. I would prefer the former. And so that's why we're moving this legislation. We're making great progress. Virtually every ag group in the country supports it. And it's not a major departure from the protocol, but it will make a world of difference when you talk about how we sort of reintroduce ourselves to the Cubans from an economic perspective. And at the same time, you know, it's potentially a $2 billion market for the United States. But it'll grow as their economy grows. And so we'll have laid the footing for even greater market access. So I think it's definitely in our interests.
Arkansas Congressman, member of the House Ag Committee, Rick Crawford.